It's time now to get behind the headlines of this week's Hendersonville Lightning with editor and publisher Bill Moss.
Good morning. The Lightning is on the streets. The Lightning is in your mailbox. And the Lightning is on the radio because it is Thursday morning, which means it's Lightning Radio time with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. Let's get behind the headlines of this week's Lightning. Good morning, Bill Moss.
Good morning. Good to be back with you on a little bit of a cool Lightning Thursday.
It is. A little bit of dogwood winter here we're dealing with. But that's okay. We're going to warm you up with some lightning here this morning and as we get behind the headlines of this week's Lightning. Bill, let's get it started. Let's talk. You know, restaurants are always in the news, it seems like. And we're going to start out this morning with a number of restaurant stories. So let's get it kicked off. Bill, a lot of businesses are dealing with this, but restaurants especially right now, and that is, you know, let's just start with your headline. Restaurants struggling to find help as labor market turns tight. It's hard to find people right now.
Hard to find people, and, you know, over the past year, we've talked about the, of course, the COVID recession, and people didn't have jobs, and now there are more jobs, and you're right. This story goes well beyond the kitchens and the serving tables and the cooks and the dishwashers. That just happens to be what we kind of focus on, Main Street and beyond.
Yeah.
In this story, we do go well beyond that to examine some of the stuff that's been reported. As the New York Times reported, although restaurant employment has risen each month this year, jobs at full-service restaurants in February remained 20% lower than a year ago. But even so, they're having trouble filling the ones they have. Part of it, we report from talking to restaurant owners and experts in the area, is probably the boost in unemployment from the $1 trillion American Rescue Act plan, which gave turbocharged the unemployment checks by $300 a week. So in North Carolina, at an average jobless benefit, but not very high, of $236, that makes $536 a week. And then when you add a single mom or even a couple that will need child care to go back to work in a restaurant or elsewhere, it really becomes a choice that many of them are making. Well, we'll wait until that runs out on September 6th before we go back to our waiting job or line cook job and so forth. Here's Nathan Ramsey, the executive director of the Landis-Sky Regional Council, telling the Lightning, right now, our employment market is tighter than it was when the unemployment rate was 2.5%. And then he says a lot of employers do cite the increased unemployment compensation as being a barrier. But there are other factors as well. We happened to reach Mr. Ramsey while he was attending and having a lot of visits with employers at a career expo on Friday. And from those conversations, he says employers are saying, number one, you've got people that are COVID scared. There's a report out that NASA, our labor force, is smaller by about 5 million people. So fewer people, a much better than in ordinary times unemployment check available for eligible people. And then the competition just among, not only among themselves, one other important factor is just the overall competition in the labor market. It's not hotels competing against hotels, Mr. Ramsey told us, or restaurants competing against other restaurants, or manufacturers competing against manufacturers. It's healthcare competing against manufacturing competing against hospitality for that entry-level worker. All these industries are competing for the same people. So that's why you're favorite restaurant might have reduced hours. It might take a long time to get your food, or some we lead with Renzo's, the Italian restaurant on Main Street at Fifth Avenue, has not managed to open at all.
You know, Bill, what I find interesting about this story is I've talked to so many folks in different businesses, not just restaurants, that are dealing with this, having a hard time getting employees. But what I can remember is before COVID, before we ever even heard the word COVID-19, We talked about this. We talked about restaurants having a tough time hiring people and keeping people. So we had that issue even before this. So it's interesting to hear so many of our business owners now say, well, it's because people are staying at home and getting, and getting money from the government, staying on unemployment. Yes, and I do think that is part of it, but we had this issue before this.
Well, and you're exactly right. It is compounded by this. And you know what? We had this issue of nursing shortages, yep. Healthcare workers, CNAs, and other those kinds of jobs as well. One of the things I think that we'll see, like a lot of things, that possibly a permanent pivot in the market is that this has forced, and restaurants just have to find a way to pay. I don't know about servers, because when you add tips in, that can make a pretty good difference, of course, in the hourly rate. But you take this companion story also on the front. What as Joel Benson said, I pay. I'm out here. I'm ready to pay. As he says, I'm ready to pay a stimulus check every 2 weeks. You just got to come to work for it.
Yeah.
But his rate at $15 an hour with benefits.
Wow.
Is pretty attractive, and a lot of them full-time. It's pretty attractive for retirees. It's pretty attractive for young people. And, of course, you see a bunch of high school kids and college-age kids and young people working at a Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about that Chick-fil-A here. But let me ask you this, too, Bill. One of the things I understand is there has been a change in these unemployment checks that we're getting now. In the past, it's just been you just sit at home and go to the mailbox and get your check. But apparently now you have to prove that you are actively pursuing work. Is that something you understand as well?
Yes, there is a work. Yeah, there is a work requirement. And we touch on that in this story. There is a work requirement that I think it's usually you have to certify or document 3 efforts, 3 interviews, 3 calls, 3 applications, whatever that is, in order to get your check.
Yeah. It's pretty
easy, frankly, to game that. And like Renzo said, a lot of the calls he does get when he puts out this sign that says it says hiring, let's open, !! Help me open. And some people are just calling him up and say, yeah, I'm interested, and then doing whatever they need to do to get that quote documentation, and with no intention of actually taking a job.
Wow. So let's move on to the rest. Let's touch back on what we were just talking about with Joel Benson. Here we are talking about restaurants having a hard time hiring people, and we open a second Chick-fil-A here in Hendersonville in a market where you wouldn't believe we would have 2 Chick-fil-A's. But guess what? We do, and we beat out other larger markets for a second Chick-fil-A. But here they are, and they need like 80-some people, right?
Yeah, he needed 84. Joel Benson we're talking about here,
yeah.
The great, fun, charismatic, I think, manager of the now old one, of the original one that brought Joel and his wife Wendy here to start with back in 2002 or 2003, I think it was. He needed 85 and he got 69. He had 69 as of Saturday when we interviewed him. We got a nice story, kind of a fun story of Joel doing some quality control of a chicken biscuit, and then we'll take. And they also have a chicken nugget kind of biscuit there. And he tells the Lightning all about how you make that. It's got good butter. It's got good coated coverage right there. When I tear it apart, I want to be able to pinch the coater. That's what he calls the coating or the batter. The coater provides sort of a cover, not only a flavor, it helps the heat, helps keep the heat in, helps keep it moist. And he's given us a tour of that quality control task that he's doing. There's kids and older people, mostly younger people, that are kind of swirling all around in the iconic Chick-fil-A red polos. And he's getting ready to open in this scene on Saturday. And, of course, they had their grand opening on Tuesday, and now it's open for its regular hours, 6:30 in the morning until 10 o'clock at night, there in the South Side Square Shopping Center at 640 Spartanburg Highway. So if you want to go, if you want to go see a traffic jam, go check it out.
Yeah, so I'm interested. You know, he needed 84 people. He's got 69, so he's down 15 people. Is that affecting him at all, or does he feel like he's going to get those people because he is paying $15 an hour with benefits?
Well, I think he does. I think he was confident, and he may have been hiring more that day and more on Sunday and more on Monday in order to reach that number or much closer to it by the time they had that grand opening at 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning.
Okay.
We'll see. You know, he's got some flexibility to, I'm sure, to increase hours with the ones he does have, to pull some over from the Chimney Rock Road store. Joel Benson, I have enough confidence in Joel Benson and his management skill and his agility to feel confident that he'll have it staffed up at a level that's needed to
get the chicken out the door. Absolutely. Hey, let's stay on restaurants. Honey and Salt, the great breakfast place in Flat Rock. Here we are again talking about employees, but they're going to have an opening of a new restaurant in Brevard coming.
Yeah, they're going to need Aaron and Edward Hill, the owners, and they kind of co-founded that with Star Teal. Star kind of brought them in, but that he's now it's all theirs now. He's pulled out from them, sold or whatever to them, however that worked. Anyway, they're the owners and operators. Aaron and Edward Hill, really nice. Really, you talk about labor, hardworking folks, of course, that are there with that really unique, really popular, really fun kind of brunch, mid morning to early afternoon. I think it's Wednesday through Sunday operation there, Little Rainbow Row in the village of Flat Rock. Well, they're going to do roll out kind of a similar addition to that, not exactly like it, but it will be similar. It's called Morning Social in that new. I don't know if you've been there. I need to check it out. I have not yet. Adaptive reuse of the historic lumberyard in Brevard called the Lumberyard Art District. That's where this Morning Social is going to open up in a space formerly occupied by something called Magpie Meeting 3. So look for that to happen later on, I think midsummer or so, a time frame. And they say in this story in the lightning that it'll come as no surprise. They are hiring for positions in both the front and back of the house at Morning Social and at Honey and Salt.
Yeah.
So go to check that out, or go to a Facebook, or get your Hendersonville Lightning and read the email address if you're interested in working at either one of those.
All right. Yeah. Interesting. Not surprising at all. Hey, Bill, before we take our break, let's go to HendersonvilleLightning.com and talk about one of the things that we've talked about before. One of the positives that came out of coronavirus and lockdown, and that was the fact that Hendersonville High School, the construction of the new Hendersonville High School, was able to go on the fast track. So much so that it looks like it's going to open a year earlier than planned, right?
Yeah, absolutely. As David Berry, he had this great report at yesterday's meeting of the Board of Commissioners, and said that COVID-19 has brought a world of problems, to be sure, and it doesn't seem like there's any silver lining. But he says, in regard to construction of Hendersonville High School, it kind of has been. Well, that's because for a while there was no children at all at the school, just
right.
Some faculty. They were able to get a big jump start on a lot of site prep. They were able to demolish and remove the old gym a year early. The fact that the campus was vacant really helped them speed this up. And this is it's a major jump ahead to open on in August of 2022 instead of August of 2023, and that's everything. The Stillwell renovation will be done. The new build, the kids will, at that point, I think the kids will actually have been in the new, the brand new construction, new Hendersonville High School classrooms and so forth, along with some swing space. I think they will have been in there for a year or so, because they're going to vacate Stillwell to do that total renovation / makeover of Stillwell and the historic auditorium.
Wow. Very interesting. Hey,
good. Credit to, I'm sorry, Mark. Credit to Van Oort Construction. Credit to the ones we have pictured here on Hendersonville, Lightning, Maggie Carnival, the one of the main architects, David Berry, John Mitchell, Carl Taylor of the school system, Dr. John Bryant, the school superintendent, Steve White, the county commissioners, the school board, for making this. This has been a triumph of cooperation and good management and efficiency that is rare to be seen.
Right. Absolutely. Hey, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Lightning Radio here on WTZQ. Coming up next on Lightning Radio, commissioners planning board says no to the asphalt plant. Some entertainment and some new heads of some nonprofits here, and the cicadas. Will we hear them? Will we see them? That's all coming up on Lightning Radio.
Kaysen Builder Supply, the official sponsor of patio season, providing quality landscape and masonry materials, exceptional customer service, and superior delivery from locations in East Flat Rock, Brevard, and Greer. Now is the time to prepare for patio season with a visit to Kaysen Builder Supply in East Flat Rock to see displays of outdoor rooms, pavers, retaining walls, and fire pits. Kaysen Builder Supply provides an exceptional service for over 40 years. The official sponsor of patio season. CaseyCompaniesInc.com.
And we are back with Lightning Radio with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. Bill, let's go back to talking about shooting ranges. We've been doing it for a while now. Commissioners have eased rules for shooting ranges. Talk to us about that story, Bill.
Yeah, that they have grown out of the Lightning's coverage, as you mentioned, over the last 6 weeks or longer, starting with the Zoning Board of Adjustment case over a shooting range that was not a commercial shooting range, but a private shooting range. But that pretty much revealed that there was a great deal of ambiguity in the county land development ordinance about how you define a shooting range, and then if you can figure out how to define them, how you regulate a private shooting range, which is the answer, not much at all, and how you regulate a commercial shooting range. And that's what the county commissioners took up for probably close to 2 hours on Wednesday morning and decided that they would continue to allow commercial shooting ranges without a special use permit in three of the five residential zones, R2R, which is one unit per acre zoning, I think that one's R2 actually, and then another that's one and a half units per acre. I'm sorry, one unit per acre and a half, and then also in R4, which is 5 acre lots, but not in R1 or R2, which are the higher density, residential zones. Motions by Rebecca McCall to reduce the hours from opening until 8 o'clock at night she wanted to reduce that to 6 o'clock. That failed in a 3-2 vote. Commissioner David Hill was successful in getting an actual reduction in the buffer from 200 feet to 75 feet. So these commercial shooting ranges can be closer to the property line than they were before.
Ah, okay. So thank you for following that story, Bill. Let's stay on county government now. The asphalt plant, of course, has come back into the news and into the headlines, and the planning board has recently said no to the asphalt plant rezoning request. Talk to us about this story, Bill, and where we go from here.
Okay, well, where we were on Thursday night was a meeting, not as long as that neighborhood compatibility meeting, which went on for close to 5 hours last month. So on Thursday night, the planning board met, heard a lot from both sides, heard a lot from the Southeast Asphalt Company owner, Jeff Shipman, who has applied for this rezoning of around 6.5 acres, I think it is, in order to build an asphalt plant there on Spartanburg Highway at the US 25 connector. He's already done a lot of grading and site prep on the site, and he directly answered questions and concerns from neighbors and opponents as to, well, if you don't have the zoning, how come you're grading your site and getting ready. And his answer is he plans to build something there anyway, even if he doesn't get the asphalt plant permit. And he also wants to show how well buffered it is and how you can't really see it from the road, he says, and how they'll have all the grading and retention ponds they need for stormwater retention and stormwater management. So that was his answer on that. Still, of course, a whole lot of opposition from, a couple dozen at least, people that stood up to speak in opposition over what they're afraid will be noise, odor, lights, traffic, stormwater drainage into Laurel Creek and eventually Green River. So Planning Board heard all that. Planning Board votes very similar to how they voted last August, which is 5-2 to recommend that the commissioners deny this zoning permit.
So what's the next step? It goes to the commissioners now, right?
Goes to the commissioners. Yeah, we'll have that. We'll have the story later on today about the hearing. County commissioners set a hearing for that. That's coming up. I think it'll be in May. We'll have the details. That's also going to be at the Bo Thomas Auditorium at Blue Ridge Community College because they have to have a large space to accommodate a bunch of people that can spread out.
What do you think is going to happen, Bill? Put your editorial hat on.
Editorial hat? I'm afraid to, because I do think the commissioners have not seen this yet. I know that I think Jeff Shipman and his attorney Brian Golden and their experts and the people from Chattanooga that make the equipment basically that they would install to make this asphalt plant. I think they'll put on some strong scientific and toxicology kind of evidence. I think Jeff Shipman will try to make the case that we need asphalt and we need these jobs. It's not a lot of jobs, but and he says this is that would be pro business. So it's a close call. It's a close call. It wouldn't surprise me to see a split vote. We'll just have to see how that one comes out.
Wow, that's going to be interesting, isn't it? And so Jeff Shipman says, even if he doesn't get the rezoning for the asphalt plant, he's going to put something there on that property.
That's exactly what he says. Yeah, and it does look to me because I mean that's not cheap. Even though I think he has some, I don't know if he's paying a contractor or as a he has some equipment himself. I'm sure most of it. Maybe most or all of it may be his equipment and his labor, but it's not free. There's some costs there, and I don't know if you've gone up in the site. I have to make a picture and look at it, and it's graded out from a wooded area to it's prepped for something. So yeah,
sure.
He says he'll be
sure. Absolutely. Hey, let's talk about some new positions that have been filled. We've got a new director for Housing Assistance Corp, and we've got a new superintendent for the Blue Ridge Parkway.
We do indeed. So it's a congratulations to Ms. Ashley McCoy, who took over for Sarah Grimes. She did a terrific job building the agency, to be sure, of Housing Assistance Corp and building many, many dwellings for people that help build the dwellings and for working families. And so Ms. McCoy steps into that role. She first joined the HAC in 2017 while finishing her master's in public affairs from Western Carolina University. And she has been in the role of directing the organization's grant and development efforts since 2018. So congratulations to Ms. McCoy on that very important job. And we just talked about the restaurant workers.
Yeah.
How much they need to make in order to take the job. Well, they need to make probably even more than that in order to afford a house around here.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
That's what HAC does.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. And like we said, new superintendent for the Blue Ridge Parkway. Bill, you got an opportunity to speak with Henderson County Cooperative Extension's Agent Steve Pettis, of course, who has a show here every Saturday morning called Gardening in the Mountains, regarding the cicadas for this year. Talk to us about the cicadas. Give us the cicada report.
Yeah. Well, we didn't even have to speak to Steve, actually, because this was an offer from him.
Oh, great.
There's a lot of interest in, he had done a column that a lot of people had reacted to, apparently, about whether you might have heard in the news about the 17-year periodical cicada brood X. And I don't know if it's brood. I have a feeling it might be brood 10, because his answer is these things make a huge amount of racket. He said, this is true that you will hear this. I'm just going to say this periodical cicada, because I don't know if it's X or 10. Somebody call up the radio or call, send me an email and tell me which one I should call it. And Steve goes, that is true. In places like Washington, D.C., North Georgia, East Tennessee, Indiana, and Ohio, the noisy insects will create a noise as loud as a lawnmower, ruining outdoor events and disturbing patio sitters.
Wow.
But will we see these noisy creatures in Western North Carolina? And he goes, luckily, no. Our 17-year periodical cicada is part of, and this is where I get, I think it's a Roman numeral, because it's part of brood 6, which is not due to emerge until 2034. So we'll just hear the usual, you know, the ones he calls, just a few here and there. Some cicadas emerge every year, but just a few of them. And they are called Dog Day, Mark, or annual cicadas. So you'll just hear a little bit of light cicada music, not the lawnmower variety that I guess some areas of the country are going to see this summer or here.
Wow. About the time we finally get to gather outdoors, we get to gather again and we're affected by the cicadas. But luckily, not necessarily here. Great story.
Not these loud orange-eyed ones.
Right, the lawnmower cicadas. Wow, how about that? Well, Bill, there's so much more in this week's lightning. So if you don't get your lightning, what's wrong with you? You got to know what's going on in our community. Bill, tell folks how they can get their copy of this week's lightning.
Well, yeah, thank you. That's exactly right. If you don't get the lightning, you won't know what's going on. You won't know about the City Earth Day and all the fun stuff in the park kickoff coming up this week.
Right.
So in order to participate, along with don't just let the lightning folks go. If you're not getting the lightning, go around to any of the lightning orange racks all around the county. Go to HendersonvilleLightning.com, as many, many more people are doing all the time, and click on subscribe to join growing legions of lightning fans that get their lightning today, lightning Thursday, or also fun and easy to do. Call Jan at 698-0407.
You've been listening to Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of the Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. This program, as well as past episodes, can be heard in their entirety on our website at WTZQ.com. Click on air and scroll down to Lightning Thursday.